in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 740. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am flying solo today. Let's all get best wishes to Miss Nicole Shiro as she tries to feel better and just feel better. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, we're going to do that over again. You're listening to us at KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby. Don't go away. Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the house.
To the house of Hornby.
It is Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. On the show today, we have Austin Rainbow Theater and their show, Sordid Lives. And later on, we'll be talking to the Barons Men, and they are performing Twelfth Night. And of course, we will have lively discussions of the world of theater in New York, Austin, Chicago, Boston, Pittsburgh, and Holbein. Don't go away.
They'll bring all the boys in. Ignore the fear and you'll be fine.
Okay, that is the House of Holbein from the musical Six. As I said, I'm flying solo here. I got a little bit tongue-tied there, but Nicole Shiro is not feeling very well today, so we're giving her another day off to make sure she just feels better and better and better. My heart goes out to Nicole. But in the meantime, I've got a couple other people that are they're dying to fill in her shoes, and they are my guests for today. I want to welcome back to the show, Christopher Pressler.
Hi.
Hi. But as you reminded me, as you came in here when you were on the show last time, we pre-recorded it. So you've never been in the studio.
Yeah, that's correct.
Here we go. So congratulations on being in the studio.
Thank you.
And I think first time on the show, Nadine Hughes. Hi, Nadine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You've not been on the show before,
no,
have you?
This is my first time.
Oftentimes I'll say to people that you've never been on the show, and they'll go, Lisa, I've been on the show like four times. it happens more often. So we played a piece of, oh, before I say what we played, I just want to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. I really do love it. I did like his song that he played about October. I forgot. Oktoberfest, October. This is October. Something about October. Because it's October. Anyway, I also want to take this time to just mention that the views expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not necessarily the views of Co-op Radio, its board of directors, underwriters, or staff. It's merely what I'm thinking, a crazy tree-hugging lefty person. So just need to get that out in the open. Have either of the two of you seen the musical Six?
No, not yet.
No.
I really want to, but I have not had the opportunity yet.
Yeah, you told me before we went on the air why you want to see it. Why do you like the idea of Six so much?
Yeah, so I grew up actually performing at Renaissance festivals, and
I take you for a Ren Faire person.
You know, I really am. I don't look like it, but I am the hugest history nerd you will probably ever meet. And
that's pretty definitive.
Yeah.
Hugest that I'll ever meet.
Yeah.
Okay. But you like the Tudors.
I love Tudor history. I'm obsessed with it. It's such a fascinating period of history, everything that was going on back then, all the changes that were happening. And so the fact that they've combined Tudor England with glam rock is just amazing to me. And I really want to see it.
Yeah. And Nadine?
I've seen a lot of drag queens do it so far
yeah,
in shows.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
A lot of pageants, a lot of talents are coming and stemming from all the music from Six. And so I've seen portions of it through the eyes of what drag queens have produced on stage. It looks incredible. My drag daughter loves it. And it's something I want to see. But of course, you know, we're running as well.
Yeah, you're in the middle. You're in the middle of work right now. That's come through. This is the first time it's come through Austin. Of course, here on Offstage and on the Air, we've talked about the whole the road for Six to get to Broadway through the pandemic was just fascinating, and it played a whole bunch of other places before it ever got to Broadway, and that was actually part and parcel of what they were going to do.
Yeah, it's really strange. It feels like it's been around for a while, but really the whole Broadway premiere and everything is pretty recent.
Yep. Very recent, actually. Well, pretty recent. So went to see it last night for the, it's the Bolin tour, I believe. They've got two tours going out. And really fun. I was really hoping I would like it more than I did. I did like it a lot. The costumes are amazing. Good. It is very loud. I mean, it's rock concert. My iPhone has the decibel thing and it just kept going off all night long. It doesn't make noise. It vibrates on my wrist.
Well, yeah, but that's crazy.
But it's like,
though.
Okay, it was loud. And yeah, I'm a senior citizen. So I'm saying, hey, you kids, get off of my lawn.
I think they're Catherine Parr or Catherine Howard is an Austin native,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
That is true.
That's cool.
And I forgot which one it was. I hope it's Catherine Parr because I liked... no, Catherine... Who's the last one?
Catherine Howard.
Howard, yeah. Mm. I liked her in the show. I mean, I liked all six of them. And it was good to hear a lot of that music that I've been hearing for the past 3 years. Just the costumes are amazing and fun. The whole thing is fun.
That's what I was wondering. I'd love, usually sometimes with the touring shows, the costumes kind of take a hit.
Yes, they do.
And it's true. I won't mention the musical that I saw last year that really took a hit.
I want to know which one.
It was the Donna Summer musical.
Oh, yeah.
It was awful. Yeah. The wigs were just horrible. I felt so bad.
Didn't get to see it. Well, that also might be, and I don't know, and I, you know, and again, this goes back to my disclaimer. A lot of the Broadway tours, and I'm using air quotes, that we get in Austin are non-equity tours, and oftentimes everything takes a hit in terms of quality. And oftentimes not. When Memphis came through, it was a non-equity tour, and I was amazed to find that out because it was an amazing performance.
But this show is so needing of amazing costuming, and
I was thinking about it as I was watching it, because, you know, it was created by a couple of college kids. And I can't imagine it because there's so much lights, sound, and costumes. I mean, it's visually so important.
And rhinestones. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah. We love a good rhinestone.
I love the footwear. It was like the high-heeled tennis shoes and sneakers.
Oh,
lots
I love those.
With lots of rhinestones, lots of sparkle. But I was just thinking, I wonder, you know, how do you sell that in a rehearsal room with a piano? I don't know how you do that, because it was all about the flash. It was all about, it's a rock concert. It's basically what it was. But I did enjoy it, and I recommend it. It's playing at Bass Concert Hall now for the next, through the weekend. You can get information at austin.broadway.com. All right. So, current events. Do y'all have any idea what's happening at 1:20 today, which is in 12 minutes from now?
Aren't our phones supposed to be going off?
Your phones are going to be going off. Everybody's phone is going to go off, and it's going to happen in the middle of this show. So I need to clue some of my listeners in. Oh, wait, before we leave six, sorry. I did see in the paper today, on March 6th next year in New York, they are doing, at the Lena Horne Theater, they're doing a six sing-along.
Ooh.
So you're going to want to go see that.
I love that it's at the Lena Horne Theater.
It is at the Lena Horne Theater.
It's great.
It won 23 awards, including the Best Original Score, Tony Best Original Score. But anyway, it's a sing-along performance, March 6th at 7 p.m. At the Lena Horne Theater. So that's something I wanted to mention about that. So let's talk about 1:20 today. And I have something here on my computer about that. But it is a test of the national warning system of some sort. I'm trying to find the actual...
Emergency broadcast system, I think.
So it's not the emergency broadcast system.
Even if your phone's on silent, the only way that you can avoid it is if your phone is completely turned off.
Turn it off. But here's what's going to happen here at Co-op Radio. Co-op Radio operates on a 40-second delay. So we are talking right now, but nobody is hearing this for another 40 seconds. And if you ever just sit there and run your stopwatch to see how long 40 seconds is, it's a long time. There's a huge delay. The test, however, which will come through here, and I believe it's going to interrupt the radio, is not at a 40-second delay. So when this test happens, and I'm telling this to my guests for the first time, they're hearing this for the first time, when that test happens, we have to take our headphones off and just continue talking as if nothing happened, because the actual test happened 40 seconds sooner.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I know.
and it doesn't matter what carrier you have. It doesn't matter. And I saw this last night and I said, oh, this can't be real. Obviously it is. It doesn't matter what phone, what kind. The only way to avoid it is if your phone is on off.
And that is true. And so we're gonna have fun with that. So for my listeners, you know, we have this. We actually go through this here at Offstage and On the Air. And co-op radio quite a bit, because we test the emergency alert system. That's that thing you always hear. This has been a test, blah, 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 blah. Well, again, we have the same 40-second delay thing. So we spend a lot of training talking about how we do our tests and making sure that we're not speaking when that happens. But when they come out, mm-hmm. when an amber alert or any of that stuff just happens, we just have to be ready for it. And for those of us who do a talk show like I do, we just have to keep talking. And so we train for it. But you haven't been training. So so listeners, when you start hearing weird things, you know that that's happened. And you will miss some of our conversation, because that will overplay some of our... But don't worry. It probably won't happen when we're talking about your show. All right. So that is it. So just get ready for that. It happens according to the clock here in another... 8 minutes. So let's talk about, we had a couple of openings on Broadway. Are y'all following Broadway at all?
I'm following The Wiz is coming to Broadway.
The Wiz is coming to Broadway.
I had not heard that.
It's coming to Broadway.
They just cast the person in the title character.
Deborah Cox is playing the part that Lena Horne played in the movie. Wow. Wayne Brady. They're on tour. They're doing their opening tours right now, and they come to Broadway in April, correct?
I believe so. I'm just going to say yes, because I don't have anything. I need things in writing in front of me. But we're not talking about The Wiz.
Sorry.
but I'm all in favor of it coming in. But we're going to talk about Pearly Victorious, which has the subtitle of A Non-Confederate Romp Through the Cotton Patch. This, of course, we've talked about it on the show. This opened last Wednesday at the Music Box Theater. It is a rousing, laugh-filled comedy by Kennedy Center honoree Ozzie Davis. It tells the story of a black preacher's machinations to reclaim his inheritance to win back the church. So this was written, we talked about this on the show, for Ozzie Davis and his wife, Ruby Dee, and now is being played by Leslie Odom Jr., and oh my God, what's her name? I'm going to come up with it. Her last name is Young, Kara Young. Is playing the Ruby Dee character, and it is directed by Kenny Leon. Did they like it? Aggregator gave, and I just realized I did not screenshot the thumbs up, but it was like everybody loved it. Everybody loved it. I think it had one negative review. The wonderful thing is that they said, it's a satire about racism, written and performed in the 60s, and it's oddly enough, I'm trying to do math in my head, 70 years later, it's still as relevant as it ever was with regards to racism in our country. But it's got a new spin on it, but it's done as a laugh-a-minute comedy, a satire. As I said, it was directed by Kenny Leon, and it's about a preacher trying to get some inheritance for, I think, his sister who's passed away from the person that ran the plantation that she worked on. It looks fascinating. Everybody says really good things about it. In the review in the New York Times, written by Jesse Green, he says, quote, Davis's farce is full throttle, blending lowbrow physical humor straight out of vaudeville with traditions of black satire and classic social comedy like Pygmalion. So it looks pretty amazing. He finds the character of, Ludie Bell, now played by Carrie Young, that her comedic timings, and she's not known as a comedic actor, to be a cross between Lucille Ball and Moms Mabley, which I think is an interesting combination.
Wow.
Yeah. So
It would be interesting, too, to see Leslie Odom Jr. in a comedy, because we're all familiar with, of course, Aaron Burr, which is not exactly the funniest of roles.
No, not the funniest of roles. But so he says that Leslie Odom Jr. is a standout in his review. He says, quote, "But it's Odom who carries the play's weight as it shifts from genre to genre and reveals further layers of character. Part of the freedom Davis took for himself and that Leone emphasizes in his staging is the right to be many things at once, not all of them reputable." So that's good. There's a new, in my Broadway briefing that I get every day, there's a new, feature when they come out with reviews, and it's just got a whole bunch of different little facts and things. But in it, they said, so they have it's the rundown, background, recommendations, et cetera, et cetera. But, in the rundown, it says racism is not funny, and yet racists somehow are. Which I think is funny. It was also made, so we know it was made also into a musical called Pearlie, oh my God, I just forgot her name, but it'll come to me. And then there was a film that I didn't know in 1963 called Gone Are the Days. So I thought that's interesting. Now, as part of that one little section in the Broadway briefing, it says there's nothing funny about the way racism has been codified into American systems of law, education, capitalism, etc. But shows like Pearlie Victorious work because they satirize the ludicrousness of these injustices and mock the partisans that continue to espouse them.
Wow. Well, that's sort of following along with a rule of satire is to always punch up.
Yeah.
With your comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
You know, bring down the systems of power through laughter.
Yep. Other critics, Broadway News' Brittany Samuel said the show should sit at the top of must-see lists for anyone who enjoys big laugh comedies that take a piercing look at serious topics. Deadline's Greg Evans says, starring a magnificent Leslie Odom Jr. in the title role and featuring an equally fine performance by the enchanting Cara Young, Billy Eugene Jones, Vanessa Bell Calloway, and more, Pearlie Victorious has been given an urgent and, oh yes, very, very funny revival by Leone and his top-notch creative team. That's quite a thing to say. The Wrap's Robert Hoffler says the funniest show now performing on Broadway. And finally, Variety's Aramid Tinubu, directed by Kenny Leone, the beautiful of the black vernacular is embedded in the Pearlie Victorious script. Specificities of black American life are infused within the jokes as Odom and the rest of the cast deftly switch from comedy to drama on a dime. And this, as you're listening to this, we're going to continue to talk, but you probably heard that, what did I say it was? And see how we get all tongue-tied. The test happened 40 seconds ago for you, but we're going to just continue on talking as if nothing happened. So, unfortunately, you missed some of that review, but what the hell? That's Pearlie Victorious. We also had another review, another show that opened on Broadway, if I can find it, and it's Yaya's, hold on, don't go away. I can't do it with Yaya's Art of African Hair Braiding. Yaya's African Hair Braiding at the Samuel J. Friedman. It opened. Oh, I did not know this. No, I think this is it says opening night, January 1st, 1970. I think it's a brand new piece that just opened last night. So that's wrong. Anyway, the Dazzling World Premiere. That's my point. This dazzling world premiere welcomes you into Yaya's bustling hair braiding shop in Harlem, where every day a lively and eclectic group of West African immigrant hair braiders are creating masterpieces on the heads of neighborhood women. During one sweltering summer day, love will blossom, dreams will flourish, and secrets will be revealed. The uncertainty of their circumstances simmers below the surface of the in the first 80 minutes of the 90-minute play, which opened on Tuesday in a Manhattan Theater Club production, are a buffet of delights. Even David Zinn's set for a beauty shop's interior, once the grate is unlocked and lifted, receives entrance applause. From that moment on, the director, Whitney White, keeps the stage activated and stories simmering at a happy bubble. I'm just going to take a little transition here. for those of you listening, just to keep everybody opening. Evidently, our phones went off at a different time than the radio thing went off. So that radio alarm is just going off now. Are y'all hearing it in your headphones?
Barely, a little bit.
Oh, okay, I had to take mine off because I couldn't hear anything else. So what I said before, it's happening again unless what I said got cut off. So we're going to continue talking about this. But it looks like a lot of fun. Jesse Green in his review says, by the last of the play's six scenes, all the women, but especially Yaya and her daughter, have something to fear from the president, who has recently referred to some African countries with a disparaging vulgarism and complained that Nigerians allowed to enter the United States would never go back. I should tell you, this happens pre-pandemic and during the Trump years. And I believe that's the president with which they are speaking of. But it looks like a lot of fun. Other critics, Brittany Samuels, said a refreshing, verbose, crackling with vibrant characters and culturally specific comedy deserves to be crowned the theatrical event of the season for black women. Vulture's Sarah Holdren says, the whole ensemble of Yaya's is strong, as B, the shop's most senior braider and most senior gossip, and Amanita, B's confidant, who got a sly sense of humor and a tempestuous love life. Zenzi Williams and Nanya Menish absolutely anchor the cast. So it looks like a lot of fun.
I love that they're bringing these things to the stage, these stories. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, yeah. 7-8 years ago, we wouldn't have been having these conversations.
No.
Right.
Okay, I need to see. We didn't, of course, didn't have time to talk to everything that we wanted to talk about. But I want to talk about two things before we go. First of all, the Nonprofit Theater Coalition is a organization of nonprofit theaters around the country that Ground Floor Theater belongs to, as well as I'm pretty sure Zach is a part of it and probably some of the other theaters. But they are trying to get some funding for the arts on the federal government, which is highly needed. And they had a briefing with Congress last Thursday with Lin-Manuel Miranda and, oh, I'm going to forget who the other one was. I'm not looking at my notes. A lot of support on the Capitol Hill, at least from the Democratic side. So this is good stuff. And I think it's a really good thing, and it's something that more theaters should be doing. With that in mind, one of the things I read is the Onstage blog, and they have some very interesting articles every now and then, but one of them caught my eye, and the headline said, why local theaters shouldn't solely depend on town government funding. And this is something that I've talked about here in Austin, and you know, up until 3 years ago, the New York City, Austin City funded just about everybody who applied, and everybody got very used to always getting money. And that changed 3 years ago, and it's a very different climate right now. And
right.
What I used to say was, you know, we shouldn't have been, if a lot of theater companies either almost did or went out of business because they lost their city funding. And I always said, and fortunately it's not something I've done, that if you're dependent on any one funder for your livelihood, you're going to get in trouble if and when that funder goes away. And we learned that. So I thought that's what this was going to be about. And indeed it was. And it does say that. But what he's talking about and what this came up to was a production of a community theater in... Ooh, I'm trying to figure out where it was. I don't know if it says what city, but it had a Republican-controlled city council had to cancel their production of Kinky Boots because of subject matter. And the subject matter, by the way, is love and acceptance.
Very controversial, that.
Because they received money from the Parks and Recreation Department that evidently had some kind of veto power in what they present.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's huge. Parks so I would I would not accept money, I don't think, no matter how much it was, if it had editorial control over what I present as an artist.
Yeah,
I feel about that.
I feel like that's just sort of basic integrity of an artist to not allow other people to tell you what to produce.
I like how you call that basic, but I don't think it's basic. I think that I think you have a higher, a lot of people I think would take the money and live within the structure of what they need because we all need money.
Right.
I think it reminds me a lot of drag and pageantry and stuff like that and what my world that I'm used to. It's like if a sponsor was giving me money for something but said, I'll give you all this money to do this, and then but you have to do this talent. It's like, no, because that's not who I am, you know?
Right.
Well, what we are learning in the state of Texas and certainly in your life as drag performers is there's a lot of that, a lot of thumbing our noses at what they're saying. I've said, and I'll say it here on the air, that I will not cancel performances no matter what the law says. And if they want to take me to jail, so be it.
Well, luckily we're good on that.
Good for now.
Yes. We definitely, as a queer theater organization, we're watching SB 12 very closely.
Yes. and not only SB 12, because there's also SB 14. I mean, there's a couple of things out there. Well, anyway, so I just sort of wanted to leave on that, make sure that we're all keep our eye on that prize of making sure that we have the freedom to express ourselves in any way, shape, or form. We have a legal right to do that, no matter what some people say, and we just keep fighting that fight. And I thank y'all specifically for fighting that fight. So with that, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to, from American Utopia, Don't Worry About the Government. We'll be right back.
Don't you worry about me.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Sheps, flying solo today, and I hear there's emergency things going off all over the place. So we are back. We had a wonderful discussion with our guests, who I'm going to reintroduce now because we're going to talk to them about why they're really here. We have Austin Rainbow Theater's show, Sordid Lives, and we have the artistic director and founder and the director of this piece of Austin Rainbow Theater and Sordid Lives, Christopher Pressler.
Hello.
Hello. And we have the star of Sordid Lives, Nadine Hughes. Hi, Nadine.
Hello.
First of all, Christopher, I just, and we'll talk about it a little, we'll talk about it now. I'm just so proud of what you've done with American Rainbow Theater. This is your third production?
Second full-scale production.
For some reason, I thought you did one.
We've done some smaller events. Okay. Earlier this year, we had a trans and non-binary storytelling event downtown at Firehouse Lounge.
Lovely.
But this is our second full-scale theatrical production.
And your first one was Laramie Project, Ground Floor Theater. And so we're looking forward to having Sordid Lives. I've been watching it go up. Tell us about this show.
So Sordid Lives is definitely very famous within the queer community. It's been around since the 90s. It started as a play and then it was adapted into a film. Del Shores wrote it and loosely based it off of the experience in his hometown of Winters, Texas.
Ah, where's Winters, Texas?
West Texas. West Central Texas.
Yeah. It's out there, girl. It's out there.
Out there in you know, hours and hours to the nearest civilization, I would say. but it's very much about the experience of growing up queer in small town Texas, which is something very near and dear to my heart.
Did you grow up in Texas?
I grew up in East Texas. Okay. That's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ouch.
And it's about a family with, they discover multiple queer members. And
NQMs, we call those.
And
multiple queer members.
And it's about how they learn to accept them and love them for who they are. It does deal with some very serious issues like conversion therapy and homophobia, queerphobia in general. But it really is just a hilarious comedy and a story of love and acceptance within
Amazing.
A family.
Mm-hmm. And it all centers around your character, doesn't it?
Kind of. I mean, I'm talked about a lot. I'm the one that's going through all the conversion therapy.
Okay.
I'm the one that's been locked up for 23 years, you know, trying to be dehomosexualized because I'm a transvestite who's obsessed with Tammy Wynette.
It could happen.
You know? there's a lot of that at the base, but a lot, it's really a close-knit family that is just trying to get through an accidental event and now having to deal with all of it coming together at once for one big, well, essentially funeral.
Right. Okay. Amazing. So I have a question as a trans person myself. And I look at the pictures, it looks like the character is a drag queen, but you're calling her a crossdresser or a transvestite. So
in the play,
there's a distinct difference between
there
those
is.
Two.
In the play they say transvestism. But the whole point of like my character, they're trying to get me to like not
be yourself.
Be myself.
Yeah.
Me personally, in my real life, I am a drag queen.
Right.
You know, so I think that's the combination of that plus with what they're trying to portray. But in the movie as well, it was very much so drag. It's not, I don't think the therapist really knows or comprehends what Brother Boy is.
Okay.
And it's something that we've discussed in the initial table work because they use he, him pronouns in the play.
Sure. Which is what a crossdresser would use typically.
Brother Boy lives his life in traditional women's clothing. Oh, and a lot of times, a lot of folks use that distinction in the difference between, you know, drag queen who does it for the sake of entertainment versus somebody who does it 24/7. You know, and it was written in the 90s, and our understanding in the past three decades has definitely
changed a lot.
Evolved.
As someone who lived those 30 years in that same community, it's
right.
Like I totally get it. It's very different from when I first came out to right now. It's a very different world.
Yeah,
and I could see how those distinctions would be blurred. So Brother Boy is the character name.
Brother Boy is my character. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Earl Ingram. locked up for 23 long years.
Well, great. I'm actually looking forward to seeing it. I'm watching y'all put it together, and you have a casket there, and
a real bona fide casket, thanks to Alpine Funeral Home all the way up in Fort Worth. They donated that to us.
Wow, good. So now we'll know, you know, just word out to all the other theater companies if you need a casket.
Yes,
Austin
absolutely.
Rainbow Theater, which is, you know, we needed one. We in a fun home. If you're doing fun home, you need a casket,
right?
So, fun trivia. Do you know the difference between a casket and a coffin? I think you and I talked about this.
We
before.
Did.
No.
Do you know the difference between
my
a casket?
God,
and a,
no.
Well, what you have is a casket, and that's what we typically see in a funeral home. Mm-hmm. The coffin is those is that shape that kind of. I don't know what the shape
like
is called.
Like old-timey wood things?
Yeah,
like,
that has the shape where the shoulder's bigger, where Dracula lives.
Yeah.
He does not. He lives in a
an oblong coffin. Hexagon, I think.
Yeah, something. An oblong hexagon.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's great. So this is, though, I mean, we're kind of talking about heady stuff, but this is a comedy.
It is a comedy, and that's the thing that is so fun about it, because so many queer plays are so focused on the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But this really at its heart is a story of joy, and it's a laugh out loud Texas romp is what we're calling it. The first time I ever saw this, I was 18 years old. I was about to go to Sam Houston State University, and they were doing it as part of their summer repertory program. And it is the first time I have ever been in a theater. And I laughed so hard. I was afraid I was going to die because I could not breathe.
Oh,
it really
gosh.
Is that funny.
Oh, well, that is amazing. Tell us about some of the other characters in the show.
So many of the characters, I think so many folks who grew up in Texas will recognize from their own family. There 1,000%. Is the overprotective, very anxious mother figure, Latrell, who deals with hard stuff by pretending it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I know that person.
And when her son tries to come out to her as a homosexual, she just keeps barreling on forward and acting like it's not a thing, even though it's very obvious and he's living his life openly as a homosexual. There is the character Sissy, who is sort of the, after her sister dies, she is the maternal figure for the entire family, who's trying to quit smoking, but the family's driving her so crazy she just can't put down her cigarettes.
I always say that if you go into any small town VFW, you will see the cast and characters of this production.
Okay.
It literally is, you have that one drunk woman who's always at the bar, always flirting with the same three men that are always there, you know, that have this. It is literally small. This play and these characters could not be more real to rural Texas and really just rural, like the South. And it's the complexity of dealing with these topics that are so, to them, cliche or so taboo. It's forcing them to go, and really you get a look into like a normal family. That's mm-hmm. really who these characters and these people are.
Right.
It's a normal family going through normal stuff that you...
With just different wrappings.
But just, yeah, yep. Exactly.
Totally understand. Well, great. So y'all open soon, right? When do you yes. open?
We are in preview tomorrow, Thursday, and then we have a big opening night celebration on Friday.
Amazing. And how long do you play?
Until October 14th. We have a Saturday matinee, and then we are done.
Wonderful. And where do folks go to get more information about the show?
www.austinrainbowtheater.org.
Excellent. God, you know, there was something else that I was going to talk to y'all about. I was thinking I was going to get this information, then I was going to jump to this other topic, and now I've done forgot what it was. Oh, no, I know. I just want to give you the opportunity that I know that Nadine, you're a drag performer, and Christopher, you are as well. Do you want to, do you have a web presence that you want to point people to, or do you not?
You can follow me on Instagram, Nadine underscore Hughes 1. That's really essentially where you'll see all my posts for my different flyers of my different brunches around town. I have brunches in all the surrounding cities of Austin and small town Texas. It's yep. it's crazy that we're branching out into places like Cedar Park and Dripping Springs with sure. drag. But yeah, everything that you can see and find out where I am is through my Instagram. So.
Great. Christopher?
So I actually am not performing very much okay. in drag anymore, being an artistic director.
As it takes a little bit of your time.
I don't know if you know anything about that, Lisa.
I don't. I'm learning from you. Well, awesome. Well, thank you all for being on the show. And I know we're going to see you again in January.
Yes.
You're doing an original production.
Yes, we are bringing the regional premiere of Back to You to Ground Floor Theater down from New York City.
Great. Wonderful. Well, best of luck with that. And we'll see you back when you are talking about that. That was Christopher Pressler and Nadine Hughes of Austin Rainbow Theater's production of Sordid Lives, playing October 6th. Through 14th at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, you may visit austinrainbowtheater.org. And I just had to go to this direction because of the funeral home thing. This has come to the fun home, which is all about a funeral home called the fun home.
Your uncle died. You're feeling...
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps, flying solo here at KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Just a reminder that the opinions and views expressed on Offstage and On the Air are not necessarily that of the radio station KOOP or its board of directors, volunteers, or underwriters. It's just me, a lefty old tree hugger, saying what I believe to be true. And joining me in the studio are my next guests, who we're not going to talk about your stuff yet, but we're getting there. But I'm going to introduce you. Lindsay Polinsky. Hi, welcome back. Hold on just a second. I got to turn your microphone on. Do it.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
And we also have Shannon Gibson. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Lisa.
Welcome. Have you been on the show before?
A long time ago.
Oh, I remember. I don't. I'm terrible.
That's fine.
So we're just going to go over what's happening locally for the next like few minutes, and then we're going to get to talking about your stuff. One thing I want to highlight that I saw that's coming up here in Austin towards the end of the month is Ride the Cyclone by the UT Department of Theater and Dance. It is directed by my favorite person in the world, Jenny Lavery. And then it I accidentally closed it from my computer, so I'm going to try to get that back open so I can actually speak intelligently. Come on, click. You can do it. Okay, there it is. So this is a musical with book and lyrics by Jacob Richmond and Brooke Maxwell. As I said, it's directed by Jenny Lavery. In this hilarious and outlandish story, the lives of six teenagers from a Canadian chamber choir are cut short in a freak accident aboard a roller coaster. When they awake in limbo, a mechanical fortune teller invites each of them to tell a story to win a prize like no other, the chance to return to life. This is a funny, moving look at what makes a life well lived. So it sounds like a lot of fun. Are y'all familiar with this show at all?
I've never heard of it. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, neither have I.
Yeah, I've heard of it before, but I never seen it. It's playing at the B. Iden Payne Theater out there in the campus of the University of Texas, where I was last night watching Six.
Oh, me too.
Oh, you were there.
Yeah.
I saw you there.
Totally.
Where were you?
I was in row S.
Where I was in row N.
Oh, nice.
So I should have looked over my shoulder.
I know,
I'd see.
Right?
There's a lot of people there I knew that went to see it. You missed our discussion about Six, but in a nutshell, what'd you think?
I thought it was super fun. I hadn't seen it on Broadway. I'd listened to the music, so I knew what to expect. But yeah, I had fun. I went with a pal, and we had a nice time.
Yeah, it's about what I said. It was a little loud for my taste.
I would love the Bass Concert Hall to get their sound right.
I agree.
Because the last few musicals I've seen there have really left me wanting in the sound quality department.
Agree. But I don't know. The quality wasn't good in that I did not understand much of the lyrics. Mm-hmm. But also just the sheer volume, which I believe would not be a Bass Concert Hall.
No, Broadway musicals have just gotten louder. Even the plays.
Yeah.
Grey House's sound effects were so loud when we went.
I need to talk to you about Grey House, but we don't have time.
We don't have time. We got time.
So anyway, Ride the Cyclone, the UT Department of Theater Dance at the B. Iden Payne Theater, opens October 25th and plays through November 5th. Also currently playing, as we just mentioned, Six at the Bass Concert Hall, plays through the 8th. Austin Playhouse, couple more weeks to see the Norwegians. It plays through the 15th. We just talked to Austin Rainbow Theater and their show Sorted Lives. Plays October 6th through the 14th. I will say that there are no tickets available for the 6th, so consider it the 7th then. I don't know this company. It's called the Barons Men. never heard of them. They're doing from Playwright, I'm not aware of, 12th Night. We're going to talk more about that later. TexArts has Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery, plays through the 15th. Proyecto Teatro still has Cabaret Orientis. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Through October 8th, the Melange Theater Company at Trinity Theater still has Deaf on the Half Shell. That's the Rita Anderson show. It plays through the 8th. And finally, we just closed Antigonic over at the Mary Moody Northern Theater. And now we have Antigone at the Filigree. And I didn't say what theater they're at, so I'm not sure. But you can find it on their website, October 12th through 22nd. And now we're going to talk a little bit about today in theater history. Are y'all anxious to hear what happened?
Ooh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Okay, well, good. Well, it's going to take me just a little second, but here it is. Okay, The Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby. Opened in 1981. I will say, so I was in New York at that time, and I had tickets to Nicholas Nickleby. It was the first show that I knew of that Harry Potter, the Chamber of Secrets did this. It was two shows. So you had to buy two tickets
and see two and a half hour shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and Nicholas Nickleby, people typically did a matinee and an evening to get it all through. Mm-hmm. I heard nothing but good things about it. And it's written by one of my favorite authors. Just lost his name. Who wrote... Bah humbug.
Dickens.
Charles Dickens. He's Nicholas Nickleby. Maybe one of my favorites. I can't never remember his name. I always want to say, now I forgot what I always want to say. Anyway, in 1961, The Caretaker opened. In 2012, Grace. I don't remember this one. And also, I don't remember this one, and I should, because, Offstage and On the Air was happening. Mauritius in 2007.
Hmm.
Yeah. And finally, I had to look this up. In 2009, Wishful Drinking opened up, and that was the Carrie Fisher's one-person show, which was also videotaped. So I may go back and look at that. Birthdays are Jackie Burns, Clifton Davis, Liev Schreiber, Susan Sarandon, and Alicia Silverstone.
Oh, that. Some heavy hitters there. Yeah.
HH, as we call them.
HH.
Yeah, that's what we do. That is today in theater history. I'm going to, are y'all Carrie Fisher fans?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Duh, yeah. Yeah, and so to that end, we are going to play right now a song called We Got Leia, and it's a musical about Star Wars. We'll be right back.
We got Leia.
We are back. You are listening to Lisa Sheps on Off Stage and On the Air. We had a delightful local section, and we were joined by Lindsay Polinsky and Shannon Gibson. And now I'm going to officially introduce them. We're going to hear their names for a third time. Lindsay Polinsky, you're in the leadership of the Barons Men, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm one of the co-artistic directors, along with Jackie Lees and Laura Trezise.
Lovely. Thank you for saying Jackie Lees' last name, because I can't figure out how to pronounce it. It's spelled L-E-I-S.
L-I-E-S.
L-I-E-S, which makes it worse.
Yeah, I think it's spelled Lies, but it's pronounced Lees.
But you are also a performer in Twelfth Night.
I am one of the Olivias.
One of the Olivias.
Myself and Stephanie Crignola, who was here this past spring for Winter's Tale, she was Paulina in Winter's Tale, we're splitting the role.
Lovely. I remember.
In a masterful stroke of genius by Shannon, our director.
We talked about Paulina because that's the street I lived on in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Shannon Gibson. Hi, Shannon.
Hi.
Now, you directed this piece.
I did.
Oh, good. Well, tell us about Twelfth Night if people don't know the story.
Well, Twelfth Night is one of Shakespeare's classics. It's a girl who thinks that her twin brother has died, so she dresses as a boy. She's in a strange land. She falls in love with a man, but the man is in love with a woman. But then the woman is in love with Viola dressed as a man. And then the twin brother shows up. And it's a lot of
mayhem
hijinks.
Ensues.
And yes, and confusing identities. And but there's a lot of really great characters.
So I'm curious, I'm sure this has been on the books for the Barons Men to do for a while. Were you concerned about SB 12 passing and going into law?
So we were concerned about that because, yeah, we had planned this season before all the hubbub of that. And we were concerned about what that would mean for us, but we don't have Viola as Cesario in a codpiece, and so we were kind of looking at like the real nitty gritty of the language of the final version of the bill, and then we, you know, got the word that the bill, a permanent injunction has been passed against the bill. How permanent that's going to be remains to be seen.
For now.
But that kind of came in right before we opened. And so we breathed an extra sigh of relief. You know, I think in a place such as Austin, where no one's humping each other on stage and most of our audiences are really wonderful audiences, we felt a certain level of safety that I think other members of our community don't have the luxury of feeling, unfortunately. But we also were ready to fight a good fight.
Yeah. To refresh our listeners' memory, SB 12 was what was commonly referred to as the drag ban. And, you know, it was basically put on the books to try to stop drag queens, but it also affects much of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Because much of his writing involves people dressing in clothes of the other gender.
Yeah.
So I was just curious whether that ever entered your mind, because it was set to go into effect on September 1st. But as you mentioned, there's an injunction to stop it from going on. Well, this is exciting. Is Barons Men done Twelfth Night in the past?
We have. We did it 13 years ago. It was actually my first show with the Barons Men. I played Fabian, and now I'm playing Olivia. And so it's a completely different show, though. I think we've only repeated one costume from that previous show. So, and Shannon can tell you more about kind of her different approach to it than what we did years and years ago.
I would like to hear that. And it sounds like there wasn't a creative choice around doubling Olivia as well.
No, that was because both Stephanie and Lindsay really wanted to be in it, and they are both great actors, and I wanted them to be in it, but they both also had some important weddings to go to weekends that the show was going to be up, and so it just kind of, but it worked out that their weddings were on different weekends than each other's.
Well, that's a nice creative choice. So tell us about your approach to this production of Twelfth Night.
Well, I wasn't around the Baron's Men 13 years ago when we first did it.
Sure.
So my choices were not necessarily, oh, I want to do it differently than last time. But Twelfth Night is one of my favorites, and I really wanted it to just be a fun time. I have dressed the stage with a bunch of flowers and greenery and living things to just make it this a production that's really alive. I think at one of the first rehearsals, or maybe when I was just pitching the show, I called it a soap opera with a heart of gold because the characters are so big. All of them have so many feelings that they have to express all the time. But there really is some beautiful poetry in it, and the feelings are real there. They're not all soap opera. It really is true love and hope and all these things that we still feel. People still feel all the time.
Sure. Well, of course, and it's been around for a few years. Mm-hmm. So all right, what's the time frame that y'all set it in?
It's during the Elizabethan period, uh-huh. during okay. the time when Shakespeare mm-hmm. was writing it.
Okay. Methinks that's good.
Yeah. Yes, I do too. I think the costumes are gorgeous. Lindsay also did the costume design.
I saw her name in the program. Hmm. So, well, Lindsay, talk about, I shared a role with somebody once before in a show, and our approaches were so vastly different from one another that I often felt sorry for the fellow actors who had to shift their relationship with this person. How different of a approach are the two of you taking?
You know, I think Stephanie and I actually have some fairly similar approaches to what we're doing. And it's been really nice to not only have the support of the director and assistant director, but to have someone else playing the role that you can bounce ideas off of. Because when I came into this, I didn't know who Olivia was. Like, Olivia's not a character that I've ever really played before. I've played the straight man in the comedy. I've played the fool. I've played the wise fool in the tragedy. I'd never just played someone who was in a comedy.
Right.
And so it was nice to kind of be able to watch Stephanie in rehearsal and take some of what she was doing, and then to ask her, oh, why did you make that choice? And then she did the same thing with me. But we ended up, as far as working with our fellow actors, I don't think any of them have had a real problem, to my knowledge, adjusting to the slight differences between us. And we have tried to kind of streamline certain timing elements.
Sure.
There was one rehearsal where I didn't realize Malvolio was coming down the stairs. And so I was jumping on a line that Stephanie was waiting on. And so Oz, who plays Malvolio, was like, are you going to do that much differently than Stephanie? And I'm like, what do you mean? And so then we talked about it, and it's really worked out really well. And I think what we could have done is we could have just alternated weekends. And what we decided to do, with the exception of this weekend and next weekend, where like I'm out Friday, Saturday, she's out next Friday, Saturday, and we kind of just flip-flopped, we kind of traded almost every other night of performances, and to keep our friends on their toes and to keep ourselves out of our heads as well.
Okay. So it's been that's great. Fun. Mm-hmm. So y'all are playing over at the Curtain. We talk about the Curtain a lot. In just the last couple of minutes that we have, tell folks about the Curtain.
The Curtain is an outdoor theater. It's modeled after an Elizabethan theater. I think it's about a third of the size of the Globe in London. It is a big round O where the audience sits in the stands, and then the stage is entirely outdoors. It is a really fun experience, I think. The first time that I saw the Curtain, I knew I had to keep hanging out with the Baron's Men. I just had to keep coming back.
And the weather is really in your favor this weekend.
It is. It'll be nice and cool this weekend. The rain should pass by 6 p.m. tomorrow. Knock on wood. Everyone
by
do a
noon,
dance.
Lindsay. You've got, so, it's going to stop at noon.
It's going to stop at noon. That's
according
great.
According to KXAN.
Even better, because I have a field trip out there tomorrow during the day. So,
Well, great. So when do y'all open?
We opened last weekend. Friday, and we are running through the 21st.
Okay, and where do folks get more information?
You can go to thebaronsmen.org. We're also on all the social media, at the Baron's Men.
Well, great. Thank you all so much for coming by. Best luck with the rest of the run, and enjoy your wedding.
Thank you. Thank you, it's not mine.
But it is. To me, it is.
Thanks.
But enjoy it regardless.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, that was Lindsay Polinsky and Shannon Gibson of the Baron's Band production of Twelfth Night over at Richard Garriott's Curtain Theater. You can see it through October 21st. For more information, you may visit thebaronsmen.org. And from Twelfth Night, the public theater, this is I Am She. We'll be right back. We are back. You are still listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Lisa Sheps, flying solo today. And that just about did it. Does it for the day. Thank y'all for joining us. Coming up next is the Austin Cooperative Hour, and my very good friend John Hoffner is here with the Austin Common Radio Hour. He's trying to wrestle the microphone away from me, but I won't let him have it. I get it for another 2 minutes, whether he likes it or not. But we will talk to you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And from the newly released cast album of New York, New York, this is the this is Lin-Manuel Miranda playing a demo from one of the songs called "Can You Hear Me?" And if there's time, if it gets to it, we're going to actually hear the song from the show. But we probably won't have time. Here it is. We'll see you next week.
Well, I've never tried this at rush hour tide. Can you hear me? Through the screaming loud bridge and tunnel crowd, can you hear me?